Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Today's guest, Graffiti Blue, is an artist with an enormous passion for language. His love of language is so strong, he has sought out mastery of words in several different modalities. As an author, he has written and published five novels, enjoying great success as an indie author with his Poets Pursuit of Pleasure romance series. As a musician, he has written and performed five studio hip-hop albums, culminating in his magnum opus body of work, Champagne Ethos, released in June of 2023. As a spoken word performer, he has hosted poetry events, competed in poetry slams, and performed domestically and abroad for decades, most notably performing in Salerno, Italy, at the 100,000 Poets for Change World Conference in 2015. Born and raised in New York City, the influence of hip-hop's golden era is reflected in every creation he makes. The raw, unapologetic nature of the city manifests as a standout characteristic of his stage performances. Recently relocated to Central California to pursue filmmaking and to write screenplays, telling story through music, film, auditory theater, and the written word is what he does. Graffiti Blue, have mic, will travel. Welcome, my friend.
Oh man, it's such a pleasure to be here. Sometimes I forget. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, I did that.
Right? Yeah. Oh my, well, that's quite a bio. I hear you. I mean, that happens to me sometimes too. It's like, dang. I mean,
yeah.
Do you ever pat yourself on the back?
Well, you know, you're only, you know, today's society would suggest that you're only as good as your last creation. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you know, and I don't want to think about legacy until I am no longer inspired. If I'm no longer inspired, it means it's about time for me to leave this planet. So no, I'm what I would consider myself a true creative. For all my creatives out there, you're a true creative. True creatives are relentless with as far as passion goes, for the drive to create something, you know what I mean? So after I've created, and sometimes the projects are so huge and enormous, it's exhausting, but after I regain my energy, I'm pretty much thinking about the next thing, you know? So, you know, and I just, if true creatives don't create, they get sick. You know what I mean? Or they're off, or something's just not right with them. It's just, it's what we were put here to do. And, you know, and it's a quirky part of my personality.
Yeah. But
hopefully, you know, I'm a pleasant person to be around.
well, thank you. I totally relate. And I think I feel a kinship with you, you know, and I really enjoyed following you on Instagram through your stories and posts and what you're doing. And, you know, although we come from, you know, diverse backgrounds, you know, I know we're both trying to kind of wake others up and make a positive difference in our own way, you know, with our words and actions. And so I appreciate, you know, what you're doing and, you know, putting yourself out there.
Oh, dude, I have reciprocity in this building. I appreciate what you're doing, and not enough creators are reaching across the aisle to unfamiliar territory. Yes, I know you. Yes, we've met already. Yes, I follow you as well. Yes, I like it. You do a whole bunch of cool stuff that I'm like, oh man, Brian's doing that. Okay. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you.
You know what I mean? But there are too few that are willing to reach across the aisle. Create, the only thing better than creation is co-creation. You know what I mean? Creating along with somebody, because you don't know what the result is going to be when until the colors have mixed, to use a metaphor.
Yeah. What drives you? I know for me, it's just like I'll get an idea about something and I just know I have to birth it one way or another, and it just kind of, works through me, or I channel it, or what have you. I mean, is that kind of the same with you, or are you like actively trying to kind of like act on a certain thought or feeling that you have to share it in a unique way?
It's the ability to create something from nothing, first off, is very God is a very godly thing. You know what I mean? The Lord said, "Let there be light," and it was light. Just to have a thought and then to build potentially a world from a single thought is increíble to me. You know what I mean? Watching, I enjoy the process of creating almost more than the result. You follow what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
100%.
I have the best seat in the house. Whether I'm writing and I'm like, man, this story is crazy, or when I'm performing, you know what I mean? I'm enjoying the performance as much, if not more so, than the audience. I'm smiling sometimes when I'm performing. I have to try to stay in character, because sometimes I could go to a heavy topic, and just to engage with the audience eye to eye, with certain individuals throughout that performance and watching their captivation. You know what I mean? I know how the story ends. I know where the poem is going, but they don't know where the poem is going, the rap is going, the story is going. You know what I mean? And to watch them take the journey with me for them is the first time. But I've rehearsed this a gazillion times, so I'm smiling because I know. You know what I mean? It, it's I get such a joy from it. You know what I mean? Of just the world building. And back to what you first said, there's a legacy component. You know what I mean? I remember when I didn't think I could write a book. You know what I mean? So then you look on your bookshelf and you got like five of them bad boys with your name on it. It's a little trippy. You're like, oh my God, have I done that? So yeah. So I enjoy, I guess the short answer is to say I enjoy all of it, Brian.
So I want to talk about your upbringing a little bit. You grew up in Hollis, Queens.
Yes,
You know, the
sir.
legendary neighborhood, which obviously played a huge role in shaping, hip hop's mainstream success, and Run DMC, LL Cool J, and many others came from there. What was that like, as an adolescent, witnessing that and kind of like feeling the energy and playing a part in maybe how you were shaped?
I wish I could give your listeners, as well as you, the feeling of that electricity. I'm at ground zero, essentially, for the birth or the genesis of the whole hip hop culture. You know what I mean? Let me see. Run DMC hit, really got his stride. They was out before then, but they really got their stride in 1983. I live up the street, so when Sucker MCs is playing through the radio and we got the big boom box on the stoop, you know what I mean? And how it is when you're a teenager. Teenage, 13, 14, 15, that's all about daydreaming. You know what I mean? You got your starter kit mustache. You know what I mean? You're not even a young man yet. You're a young man. You know what I mean? And you're in your head and all of this stuff. And Run DMC were gods. You know what I mean? Oh my God. And to be, no one knew it was going to be a global thing, but the electricity of New York City, in particular, Queens, Hollis, Queens, to have the local guys that I watched in Jamaica Park, Baisley Park, Hollis Park, to watch them in the park, you know what I mean, hijacking electricity from the light pole to plug in some turntables. And these guys that people knew and went to school with and all of this stuff, to be on American Bandstand
Yeah.
was nuts. I'm not bad with the words, but I don't think I can put into words what that feeling was. That's why I say I wish I could just bottle that feeling and give it to
Yeah.
because it was amazing. Everybody knew we were a part of something crazy or very huge, bigger than us that was going on, but no one knew exactly how big. And I feel actually right now that you and I actually are on the precipice of a new day. You know what I mean? With the technology changing, and as much as technology can do, they cannot do what God does and create something from nothing. All the highest technology is only a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. You know what I mean? So the power, and there's a pendulum shift, in my opinion, and the power is going to be very reluctantly, might I add, given back to the creators.
You know, that's very interesting. There is so much change and expansion and transition going on right now in so many different ways that are well, just completely different than the way that we know.
Yeah,
And
yes.
I kind of my hope is that, to reiterate what you just said, is that, like, once people start getting tired of the staleness of the AI, and this, you can feel there's energy in everything, and there's
Yes.
not going to have the same energy as somebody truly, really creating from within. And so it's my hope that it's maybe our turn will come again, and stronger than ever, very soon.
Yes. Yes, everything's in cycles. We cannot avoid the nature of the universe. Everything's in cycles. Every time something goes hyper to one extreme, it will eventually go the other direction. That's just the way it is. The dichotomy is very real, and despite some of the powers that be, their best efforts to control, dominate, exploit creatives. You know what I mean? Your arms are too short to box with God.
I love that. I've never heard that
Yeah.
before. That's
Yeah.
fantastic.
Yes.
Did so growing up in Hollis, did that was that you, the influence that you needed to become a poet and a rapper? And I mean, just kind of like seeing what was going on there, the energy of it, and experimenting yourself and letting it kind of evolve.
Hollis gave me a lot of edge, you know what I mean? I was the word nerd, I grew up around a lot of tough guys, okay? And one of the ways I survived was that I could rap really, really good, So the thugs kind of put me under the wing. The thugs protected me. He was like, this guy might be our ticket out of the hood. So let's make sure nothing happens to graffiti. Or my original MC name was MC Sergio D. And Well, I named myself after the Sergio Valente glasses. That was a popular thing in like 85, and then Sergio got corny to me. Then I called myself Serge, Serg, the suave enhanced rhyming genius. And that lasted for a short while. Everybody from New York doesn't call me graffiti. Everybody from Cali calls me graffiti. Everybody from New York calls me Serge. That's
Really?
how I know. Yeah, when I pick up the phone, if you call me Serge, I know you got to be from the East Coast. You know what I mean? And then I kind of grew up, and I was like, should I even bother with a nickname? Because I put out a couple of books by then, and then I was gonna open a poetry club, a poetry spot, which I eventually did. And I was gonna call that the poetry spot Graffiti Blue. And I started blogging on MySpace about what a typical night would be inside Club Graffiti Blue. Well, the stories didn't go viral, but they were amazingly popular. So people started calling me Graffiti Blue. And I'm just like, I like that. And here I am. But growing up in Hollis gave me a bunch of edge. So, a word nerd that may drop an F-bomb. I love putting F-bombs in the middle of a eloquent speech, and that gave me an edge performing because you don't know when it's coming. You know what I mean? I'm so random, and my inflection, I'm expressive and I'm kind of loud, as most New Yorkers are. You know what I mean? So the Hollis gave me a lot of edge, and in MC circles, if you don't have courage, you better get some, because a rap battle is brutal. You know what I mean? A rap battle is brutal. You're going from neighborhood to neighborhood, and battling, and if you win, you might get punched in the face. You know what I mean? If you embarrass somebody, too bad. And if you lose, you may be humiliated in front of your neighborhood. And in black poverty, sorry to say, sometimes hood fame is all you have. You know what I mean? So the stakes are extraordinarily high for children of the ghetto like myself. You know what I mean? So Hollis gave me edge. So by the time I become in my 20s and 30s, when I really developed as a spoken word performer, that edge made me fearless. You know what I mean? I'm going inside. I'm just like, man, if I can survive a rap battle, saying some eloquent words in a poem, that this is nothing compared to potentially getting punched in the face on some random street corner doing a rap battle. So that passion kind of translated, and I became infamous for my ability to perform. It was pretty cool.
I love that. Was there when Run DMC and some of the other artists were starting to pop, was there this huge rush of competition and guys trying to kind of be the next person to come out and make it? And I mean, what was that like? You know, the competition, the aggression that might have been involved with that.
I was in the mix. I'm probably, New York, as big as and as populated as it is, what I think about 14 million. You know what I mean? It hip hop itself is an amazingly small world. You know what I mean? I was shoulder to shoulder with probably your listener's favorite rapper's favorite rapper. You know what I mean? The competition is fierce. I mean, I remember when a lot of these guys were coming up, because I'm in the same circles. I was never famous, but in New York, everybody's has some level of fame who's actually doing it. So, I'm rapping shoulder to shoulder with guys like Pharoah Monk. Pharoah Monk and I shared the same manager with Onyx, Fredro and Sticky, and those guys are from there. Those guys was down the street. It was freaking crazy. The Lost Boys were just across the bridge. Were Freaky Ty and Cheeks and those guys. You know what I mean? Those guys was at the same parties that I was at. You know what I mean? Sometimes we would open for them, sometimes they would open for us. It was crazy. And you better bring your A game. You had to have, those days, Brian, you had to have at least 100, what we call bars, 100 bars just with you, because at any moment somebody would freaking challenge you. Let's battle. It happens at the party. It happens on a random street corner. We freestyling. My man Troy lived across the street. His MC name was Kid Hood. He lived right across the street where he would eventually be killed. But right before he was killed, he actually made it. He was on the Tribe Called Quest Leaders of the New School Scenario Remix. This guy was. I mean, all of these guys are either will be stars or are stars already. And this is, and Brian, this is very normal. You go into the club and Tretch from Naughty by Nature is playing pool. Redman is smoking a joint over there. And Evan, nobody, well, everybody cares, but no, it's all normal, you know, and it's crazy. And if you're not good in a rap show, this is the culture of rap, by the way, but the poetry audience is way more forgiving. You know, poetry, if you forget something, somebody will snap their finger and say, "Get it together, get it together." If you start stuttering in a rap show, they'll throw a freaking Corona bottle at you. You know what I mean? A Heineken bottle at you, something like that.
That's
You
pressure.
know, and again, you know, hood fame is all you have, you know, as a child of the ghetto. So getting booed, and I've seen, oh my God, that it, you that will stay, that will be a stain on your ghetto resume forever. However, triumph and cheers, and if you kill the show, you know, there's many shows that I did kill. I'm not gonna say I killed every show because that would be a lie. You know what I mean? But for shows you did kill, I mean, man, you're a king for a day, you know? You know, absolutely.
Wow. I'm gonna take a little jog to the left here, talking about you currently. You know, with social media as it is, and the consistent algorithm changes, and all the stuff that goes on with that. I mean, you know, and all the false noise and people just chirping that don't really have anything to say. Does it, I don't know, is it make it harder for you to kind of want to show up and get your trying to like make that extra effort to get your stuff out there? I mean, because it can feel like such a bummer sometimes. And I know myself, it's just like, and I'm an introvert too, believe it or not. And it makes it even kind of harder. And so I don't know. It just talk to me about like, you know, creating in a society right now that with people where people don't really read that much anymore and aren't really, you know, digging deep like they used to learn and entertain themselves.
Yeah, it's very tough to be a writer in a world where people don't really read. You know what I mean? And most creators, especially independent creators, not ones that have a record deal, not ones that have a major publishing company behind them, you know, pushing their book out or whatever, you know what I mean? And so social media, you know, can be the gift and a curse, you know what I mean? Sure, you could be independent. You don't need the big machine per se, you know what I mean? But you do need a team of the machine, of your own machine, how big or how small that necessarily may be, to constantly put it out. And then the biggest challenge, though, of social media is finding the balance. And in this culture today, you know, most people are afraid to not be posting content. You know what I mean? If I go away, you know, I'll be forgotten and all that stuff. But okay, trick. Here's a trick. Most creatives have to, at some point, go away, shut the door, close the blinds, crack the window, maybe to let God in. But they have to, they gotta create. You know what I mean? So you gotta create. So there's nothing wrong with asking yourself every day, just in general, but especially towards social media, about what is important. What is really important to share? Am I truly inspired to share, or do I feel obligated to share? And if you feel more obligation, then I have to then one would beg the question, why are you doing it? You know what I mean? Isn't the whole point of being an independent artist, working for yourself, is being on your own schedule? You follow what I'm saying? So, you know, if you're good, you know, there's no bad time. There's never a bad time to put out a great project. You know what I mean? So if you put out a great project in 2023 and your next great project is until 2027, do you really think they may have missed you, but yeah, that absence will make the heart grow fonder. People are like, man, you know what I mean? You know, Brian is back, graffiti is back, da 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 da, and you do. I would rather that scenario than a mid-level to weak effort every day. Yeah, I'm every day. I put out something, meh, not bad, but not great, meh. And then people grow tired of you. Be like, okay, and do I really want to consume, meh, or do I want to wait for the great, you know? So I find it difficult, and we're human, you know what I mean? So a lot of us, you know, maybe we'll see people doing great things every day and be like, I gotta do something great today. Not necessarily, you know. First, be great, do something great, and then share it. Don't feel obligated to be great. Feel inspired to be great.
Yeah, I think that's the key right there. Just really go within and say, do I feel obligated to share today, or do I really want to share today? And it's everything's energy, and people can sense that, you know. And I definitely have questioned that myself sometimes. And I know I've definitely posted a lot of times when I felt obligated to and didn't really want to. And it, yeah.
And recently, you know, I'm sitting, I've done a bunch, you know what I mean? I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to be, especially after I finished my last music project, I became, it was so spiritually exhausting, not in a bad way though. I wasn't like, oh God, I'm glad that's done. You know what I mean? I had all of this music in me that I had to get out, but I was so, it's like having a good workout. You know what I mean? You feel the burn, but it's a good burn. You know what I mean? You know, and I was so, I found myself in a period of this reflection. I was like, wow. You know what I mean? I said, I've done a whole bunch, you know, so I was reflective. So when I looked, I had about 20,000 images of all of these poetry scenarios because I ran two poetry venues on both coasts. On the West Coast, I had Rhythm and Poetry in Sacramento, and on the East Coast, I had Rhythm and Poetry in Atlanta. So there was a period about 10 years where every Thursday night I was host of ceremony for this spot. So there was always photos of all of these women and men, talented artists, musicians, poets, writers, whatever. You know what I mean? That we took all of these pictures. So I got like 20,000 pictures. So, because I was so exhausted from the creative process, I said, you know what? I'm gonna just start sharing these daggone pictures. So I was posting all, you know, 20 times a day, all of these. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this picture. This is the artist Mahogany Mama from wherever, Pennsylvania, somewhere. I remember this night, da 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 da. But I was inspired to share. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh,
You know what I mean?
totally.
I didn't want to write. I just wanted to share. I'm just like, hey, everybody, this is, let me just let you guys know this journey was so cool. And it felt so good to not be writing or making music because I was like making music for the last two projects. I think I shut the door and the blinds and I was writing and making music for like 3 years straight. So it's like I came up for air, you know, so.
Well, in some ways that, yeah, but it gave you a break, but also kind of gave people another taste, you know, kind of you and what you're about and what you've done, and highlight some of the other people you worked with.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you find yourself thinking about or guiding your art as you are creating it so that it'll be more marketable, or do you just go with your heart and intuition and hope that it is marketable?
No, that is a magnificent question.
That's what I do.
I used to be the early. I got a confession to make. I used to be amazingly selfish with the art, as far as I only I be it's poetry can be so cryptic. Only the poet knows what the hell they're talking about. You know what I mean? So I would see some of the faces when I was early poetry performances especially, and I'm just like, okay, I'm not reaching that the desired result here. Nobody ever was just like, you're bad with words, but I wish I knew what he was saying. I was just too cryptic. So yes, as
You're too
far as
clever.
mark, right. So I keep marketability in mind, and I kind of would like to change that word and say relatability. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The main components of a story is create a likable character, put them in a world of trouble, and then see how they get out of it. Well, with any creation, create a likable character who can like or love, for that matter, someone who they don't know. So I have to make the story, the way I tell it, and the way I deliver it relatable, i.e. marketable, you know what I mean, for the audience. And then I can go down the journey. And you know, and I know the stories that work. And the best way that I usually do this is through the blog. So I will blog a poem, a story idea, a demo. You know what I mean? But like, hey, does this song, poem, story, does it work? You know what I mean? And then you get the feedback and whatever. So by the time I finish an actual project, that story, poem, song has been field tested. By the time it reaches the public, by the time the album is out, by the time I'm on stage saying this thing, or in an interview talking to you, I already know it works. You know what I mean? And I start smiling because I'm enjoying the journey. I'm just like, oh, I can't wait for the second verse. They're gonna kick me out. Here comes a twist, whatever, whatever, whatever. So yeah, but marketability, I do concede. I don't, it's not at the cost of the art though. You know what I
Right.
mean? Sometimes you can't, and I encourage my creatives to not spell it out for them. Your audience is a lot smarter than a lot of people give them credit for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's I don't, if you can comprehend my art in one sitting, I'm not doing my job. I want to make you rewind it, be like, man, that's a compelling story, but his art is so layered. I want you to catch something the second and third and fourth time you listen to it that you
Yeah.
didn't catch the first time. And that's when you start getting, you know, that's when people start sharing your book, like, wow, this book is really good. You need to read it. That's when the stream numbers go up because people are like, oh, rewind that. Well, what did he say? You know what I mean? Rewind that. You know what I mean? So,
No, I love that. I love that. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, definitely people like when people listen to something or read something or watch a movie, they always a lot of times we try to like put ourselves in the position of the protagonist. Like how would we handle that? Or maybe I've been through something similar. So in some ways I think that relatability does bring marketability
yes.
because of the shared experience. I know there's something that you wanted to talk about, and I'm curious because I know that typically the idea that there is no money in poetry, but I want let's talk about this a little bit and maybe how it's been you've experienced it.
Especially when I came to when I started in Atlanta, you know, and I had a and you know, I'm no rich guy, but I had a couple of dollars. So I'm just like, okay. And I notice the poetry culture as far as Atlanta goes, you know what I mean? There wasn't Poetry doesn't have an infrastructure per se, like maybe the comedy scene does. Comedy and music have a certain infrastructure. You know what I mean? You may, you know, you go on, you know, you go on to underground clubs in comedy, or the underground clubs in music, or the Chitlin' Circuit in music, or whatever that is. And you know, you kind of build up to this grand crescendo, you know what I mean, of whatever that is, record deal, a book deal, whatever, published, yeah, whatever. Poetry, there is some structure like poetry slams and things of that nature, but there's not like an infrastructure. So You could do open mics till you're blue in the face, and you could be having people in the first, second, and third row crying, be like, oh my God, that poem changed my life. Doesn't mean that you're gonna necessarily get a paycheck. Like somebody is not, there's no infrastructure, there's no talent scout in the audience typically that's like, wow. Graffiti. Wow, Brian, you were amazing. Won't you come speak at this TED Talk? You got to do that on your own. Hey, why don't you come over here? Somebody might ask you to feature. You know what I mean? It'd be, why don't you be our feature poet after you've killed the stage? Maybe, but that's often kind of social politics. Maybe they like you, you're safe, whatever. And even then, you might get paid. You might not, you know what I mean? And sometimes they pay you, and there's no real budget. Now, there was a renaissance, but this is very fascinating. There was a artistic renaissance that went on in Harlem where the arts, jazz, poetry, and so forth were more appreciated. But the way the culture is, it actually has an economic reason and foundation. Most poetry venues started because of economics, meaning that most speakeasies are attached to a cafe for coffee, a restaurant, or something like that. And those cafes and restaurants make their money Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, you know what I mean? Where people go out and people spend money. Well, they had trouble Monday through Thursday. Because everybody's at work, nobody's really going out. I don't want to go out tonight because why? I have to work in the morning, right? So how do we get people in here? So they would be left like, hey, karaoke night, open mic night, poetry, whatever, whatever, whatever. And many of the modern poetry spots were started not necessarily for a love of the arts, or those people obviously love the art if they freaking started it, but they would the owner of said cafe, said restaurant, said whatever, you know me, would then ask the most passionate artist poet that they knew, say, hey, you know, you guys want to do something Wednesday, Thursday night to try to get some people and get some butts in the seats. You know what I mean? And you could have maybe the door just as long as your guest by drinks and food, you know? You know, and that how it started. So there's no quote unquote infrastructure. I was trying to break all of that by investing money, having a startup, and then leasing my own building or what have you, and then say, okay, let's do it like here. And I was kind of the renegade. I'm kind of the, I wouldn't say I'm the villain of poetry. I wouldn't say I'm the villain, but I am the guy asking, why not? Why can't we build an infrastructure? Let's go. And a lot of people were open to it, but I had a lot of pushback as well because I was against the grain. But are we not revolutionaries, Brian? Are we not supposed, what do we do if a poet is not at the forefront of a revolution? What the heck is, what are we doing? Is it the Constitution? Isn't it poetic? You know what I mean, we the people, you know, and all fine. So to be self-evident that all men are created equal, life sounds like a poem to me. You know what I mean? So yeah, so.
Speaking of which, are you open to sharing something with us right now? Or did I, is that, do you have something
No,
ready or?
let's yeah, well, I always got something up here. What would be appropriate since we're talking about infrastructure
Or whatever
would
you want.
probably be what would be there is no money in poetry. Why is that? Poets are smart enough to locate the seeds of inspiration. Wise enough to prepare those seeds for cultivation, clever enough to harvest the words, seasoned enough to roll up the herb and blow smoke into pronouns, metaphors, and verbs. Haikus and testimonies, shadow boxing with soliloquies, stanzas, novels, and sweet melodies. The earth is the poet's mother, and we indeed are those special children that take root in her richness as we bask in the light of the sky. Leaves personify verses as they fall and fall. The many colors of crimson blanket the earth the way open mics blanket eager ears. The nature of balance and a balance of nature. But speak about balance and they look like they hate you, especially when balance is about that green paper. Or at least they hate the fact that you ask, looking at you sort of like I would imagine a pimp would look when his bottom bitch says, "Daddy, I'm tired of living fast." Why is that? As a matter of fact, how in the hell did we get here? That awkward place without balance where resources aren't reinvested in sources. Poets are smart enough to harvest fruit in dry seasons, bold enough to lead legions. Clever enough to stick their brain into chaos and pull out reasons. Clever enough to say a million lines with a thousand topics, but not smart enough to turn a profit? Stop it.
Dang, that was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Holy
Oh,
smokes, that was fantastic. I love that. That was beautiful.
hey, appreciate it. Many artists, and what I've learned over the years is it's not that there's no money in poetry. You could argue that there is no money or infrastructure in poetry. The money is in writing. Write, develop things. If you could write a poem, you could write a screenplay, you could write this. You can create. That poem, in essence, is the basis of your creativity. You know what I mean? So, yes, there are an elite few that get paid very well for speaking engagements, and I know some great guys doing this. The poster child for a poet that I love is a poet by the name of Abyss, Abyss. You're all of your listeners, or anybody within the sound of both of our voices, should probably follow this guy. I featured Abyss in Atlanta. Oh God, what was that? 2017, 18, and he was on HBO Deaf Poetry Jam. He gets busy, and he's one of those guys. You know what I mean? He gets a nice fee for speaking out. Any, multiple level threat. Guy play. I think he plays a guitar. He freaking can sing. He can rap. And he can freaking do a poem. He is that guy. He's got all the elements. He's got a magnificent performance, presence, energy, all of that stuff. There are guys. And I'm not shabby.
No, you're not. Not at
I've
all.
spoken in front of, I've done some amazing things. Speaking abroad, speaking at poetry conferences across overseas. I was commissioned to speak for the lieutenant governor of New Jersey and all kinds of stuff. So, there are levels. It's kind of a who game too. As you have found out a long time ago, it's a who game too. But if you are able, it's very powerful. I spoke at weddings and things like that. So if you can translate and think outside of the box, you know what I mean, and not necessarily depend on talent alone. Some people be like, "Well, I'm a badass, so somebody should see me on Instagram and just want to hire me." You're not gonna get the call, buddy. You're not gonna get the call. You better hit the street, and you better. I am just a driven guy. I'm just like, you are going to know after I perform here tonight. You are going to know. I'm gonna kick your ass so good. Somebody's gonna ask me to come to their spot, and that should be the goal.
I love that. What are some things you wish you could tell your 20-year-old self?
Good God. I wonder if the 20-year-old me would listen.
Right?
If he had an open ear, I would tell him, The only thing that matters is the journey and not the destination. If he could understand that, it might be above him, you know what I mean? 'Cause 20 is a very squirrely age. We think we're grown. But we have no idea, you know what I mean, about how young we actually are. I would say enjoy the journey. You know, I was so hyper focused on destination, wanting accomplishments, wanting to be where the OGs of the day were. And then an OG when you're 20 is 35, right? You know, so wanting to be where they're at, and only to realize, as soon as you attain, the desire never stops, man. You know, as soon as you reach the destination, you're thinking about the next freaking destination. And it's almost instant. As soon as you obtain your wildest dreams, you know what I mean? It's just a reflection of the expansive nature of infinity, right? It never stops. It just never stops. As soon as you get that, you know, man, I want this thing. I always wanted it. And as soon as you get it, you're like, what's next? As soon as I finish one book, I was thinking about the follow-up book. As soon as I finished that one, I was like, you know what would be cool? You know what I mean? You know, it never stops. I would tell my 20-year-old self, sorry.
No. I love that. The journey, absolutely. Me too. Now I know this creative thing. I don't want this to be a personal question, but like I know for myself,
Oh, it can
I'm
be.
very proud of everything I've created. But I know at some point, some of it was I utilized it as a validation tool. Was that maybe the case for yourself as well? And I think sometimes when we are, it's like, what's next? What's next? It's because of that, like, part of ourselves that aren't very self-accepting yet.
No, I think you're absolutely right. A big part of that is the difference between thinking and knowing. A lot of us think we're great, but deep down, we have reservations about if we actually are, you know, and it's a very spiritual journey, you know what I mean? Temet Nosei is Gaelic for know thyself, you know, and some would say the more you know yourself, the closer to God you get. And I believe that is 100% factual. And, you know, and I was like, man, I thought I was really great. I'm like, all of this stuff in my head, if I could translate it to people, I'm great. You know what I mean? And some of us walk around with this ego and bravado like we're great, and we're not. Some of them are actually great, but they're putting too much mustard on the ego, and some of them aren't great at all. So I reached a point now as I talk to you today. I know I am, well, great. You know, I just know it. You know, I don't have to. I was trying to prove it to myself more than anybody else. Yeah, I was looking for validation, like everybody else was. You know, I had a lot of missteps. You know what I mean? Thinking that people who that have never done it could tell you how to do it. And no one can tell you. No, that's between your journey is between you and your God, and that's just it. But I'm looking for more quality. I'm like, now that I know I can build an enormous world, can I make it relatable to everybody else? You know what I mean? How do I get all of these ideas in my head? How do I translate it to the people?
Yeah, I love that. You know, and there's that fine line between really just confidence and then just that's just ego that's just kind of getting in the way and just really not fun to be around and just annoying.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we can. I've had moments where my ego was out of control, as I'm sure probably you have too. You know, and boy, the world has a funny way of humbling us, does it not?
It certainly does. Oh God, we're winding down, and this sucks because I have so many other questions. I'm gonna have to have you on again, but I want to finish with what does success mean to you?
This is very funny, and I would love to talk to your audience right now too. First thing, I'm gonna answer a question with a question. And to get to success, first, I figured out that you have to ask what success looks like to you. Everybody's definition of success is different. And I will give you mine the way you asked, but I'm kind of trying to make a point here. And I said, man, I said, success to me, some people it might be more money than God, some people it might be the fame and all of that good stuff. To me, what success looks like on a day-to-day is I work for myself, I get up in the morning, I make me a cup of coffee, and I sit right here and I'm looking at the rolling hills of Larkspur, California, out of my window. And I just create in peace while I'm listening to the birds chirp. If you tune your audio, you can probably hear the birds chirping outside my window. That is success. I'm at peace and I'm doing what I love to do, which is creating worlds. And I'm not necessarily rich, but I'm comfortable enough so that the bill collectors aren't beating my door down. You follow what I'm saying? And I can afford to spearhead projects if I want to. If I want to put out an album, I'm getting ready to do a vinyl special edition version to my catalog or whatever like that. If I wanted to get a open another poetry club, I could do it. If I wanted to get a studio, I could do it. Not Daddy Warbucks at all, but the freedom to create. The long version to the answer of your question, sorry, I'm get long-winded at times, is having the ability to move on your own terms and create when you want to create.
Amen. I love that. No, I'm right there with you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we have an accord.
Yes, we do.
We're brothers now.
Oh,
We're brothers now.
yes, we are. Oh, Graffiti Blue, I really appreciate you and your skills and your insights and for having you join me here today.
Ryan, man, thank you for the chit chat, man. Hopefully I wasn't too chattery. I get going. My brain thinks faster than my lips. Appreciate the invitation, man. Keep doing what you're doing. I need to pick your brain. We need to reverse this. I need to have you as a guest on Just My Thoughts. And I would love to ask you a litany of questions, man. But and
No,
man, I appreciate you,
anytime.
man. Yeah,
Oh, thank
man. You
you.
Amen. God bless you, man. To all of your listeners, Brian is my
And you're
guy.
mine. I thank you so much. And I can't wait to share this with everybody. And we'll.
Amen. Amen. God bless you, man. Take care of yourself.
You too. You too. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well. Be creative and always be yourself.